to Outdoor Explorer in Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Paul Torta. Orienteering is a sport of using a map and compass to navigate in the outdoors. This Outdoor Explorer introduces the sport, discusses how new technology and mapping is influencing orienteering, and learns from Olympic Nordic skier Scott Patterson what it's like to be a beginner. Also on the show are Jen Joloff, author of Fog Runner, and Mike Robinson, Arctic Orienteering Club Board President. Stay tuned for Outdoor Explorer. Hi, welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. I'm here, we're talking about orienteering today. Very exciting, and we're recording this on a sort of rainy day in August, but there's still some meets coming up. So I have Jen Joloff, Mike Robinson, and Scott Patterson with us to talk about the sport and the club here in Anchorage. So why don't we first go around and introduce ourselves. Jen, why don't you go ahead and start with your go ahead and introduce yourself.
Okay, thanks a lot, Paul, for having us here to talk with you. My name is Jen Joloff, and I'm a longtime orienteer. I first started orienteering back in 1991 when I came to Alaska following my college boyfriend, who is still my partner. And he introduced me to orienteering right away with a 24-hour orienteering race in the Peters Hills of Alaska, where I lost all of my toenails and sprained my ankle and ran on that sprained ankle for the last 18 hours of the race. And came away loving it, thinking that it was awfully fun to get out there and use a map and compass to try to find my way around.
That's great. So if romance and orienteering, better yet. Scott, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Scott Patterson. I'm mostly known as a Olympic Nordic skier. I also participate in a bunch of the mountain running races in the summer. And I'm relatively new to orienteering. I was probably first exposed in high school cross country back in 2011. But this year is really the first that I've been participating in most of the events around Anchorage. So kind of bringing a new perspective to the sport from a little bit different end.
That's great. Well, I look forward to hearing from you, Scott. And for listeners who aren't familiar, Scott is one of the best. And one of our lead athletes here in Anchorage. And Mike?
Yeah, hey, my name is Mike Robinson. Thanks for having me on the show. I have been orienteering. I thought we might be asked this. I was trying to figure out, I think I started orienteering about 14 or 15 years ago. A friend of mine invited us to the last meet of the season, which was a Scoro at Russ and Jack. And me and my wife went with her, and I thought it was a blast. And then that next season, I got started with it. And then somewhere along the lines, I got shanghaied into being president of the local club. So that's my current role for a while now. So
that's great. And that is something that makes the world go round of volunteers like you. So Jen, why don't you explain the sport of orienteering to the listeners who aren't familiar? And might just throw out a word, a SCORO. So talk us through the sport.
Sure. So orienteering at its most basic is finding your way between control points using a map and a compass. The map gives you the specific information about the area that you're moving through. And the compass is really there just for one reason, and that's to keep the map oriented or facing the same direction as the features in the real world are facing, so that when you're navigating, you're not navigating completely backwards. It's a worldwide sport that people play, do a lot in Europe and other countries. And the symbology on the maps that we use is exactly the same in Alaska as it is in Japan, as it is in New Zealand, as it is in Frankfurt, so that you can go and do the sport anywhere and recognize the symbology on the maps, whether or not you speak the language. As a competitive sport, it's kind of interesting because it requires both mental and physical fitness, which is some people would say that any sport requires some amount of mental fitness, but I think that orienteering is special in that you have to be able to regulate how fast you're going so that your brain still works well enough to be able to read a map and make sense of that data, that visual information, and process it as you're going along. It's not geocaching, which is using special electronic devices to that point you in the right direction to find something. And it's also not an Easter egg hunt. So you're not out there randomly trying to run across something in the woods. There's a very specific flag that you're trying to find, which will be located on a feature in the real world that's represented by a symbol on the map that you can locate. And the symbology on the map, as I said, is the same world round for the orienteering sport. And it's very, very specific down to individual boulders and individual light poles, as well as having topographic lines and vegetation information. I'd say that the main goal of orienteering is efficiency. It's about how quickly you can make decisions and how quickly you can get from here to there.
So Jen, so I show up at a meet, and we'll talk about getting involved with Mike in a little bit. And am I following a compass around? Am I do I have a map? Like, how's it actually, when I'm on the ground, how's it working?
Sure. So when you first start orienteering, the very first thing you're going to do is figure out where you are to start with. And when you're doing an orienteering race, that'll be marked by a triangle on the map. And it'll be around a symbol on the map that is the feature where the start station is. You look and you see where the number one is and where the circle is that you're trying to get to next, circling a symbol on the map. And you turn your map or orient it so that the symbols on the map are facing the same way as the features in the real world. And this is where your compass can come in handy, is your compass has a needle on it that's always pointing to the north. And with an orienteering map, the top of the map is always magnetic north. So you don't have to worry about the confusing declination things that people have haunted you with that makes you not want to do any kind of navigation ever. In orienteering, the top of your map is always going to be magnetic north. That's where you want the needle of your compass to be pointing towards. So you turn your map until it's lined up and figure out where you're going to go. And then you're going to start moving towards your first control station. As you're going along, you want to be looking at both your map and the real world to make sure that every single feature in the real world that you see, the hill on your left and the boulder on your right, that you can identify what symbols those are on the map. And you know exactly where you are located, both on the map and in the real world. And you follow your own route choice. There'll always be more than one route choice to get between two points, and you have to decide, is it more efficient for me to climb up and over this hill in what would be a very short route but steep, or is it more efficient for me, because I'm a good runner but I'm not really good at climbing hills, to go all the way around the hill, taking a longer but less steep route to get there? So you're constantly making decisions and evaluating which choices are going to give the best results for you, which may be different from other people.
It sounds like a lot of fun. Well, it is a lot of fun. I've done it. Let's say I'm a beginner, and do I need to know how to use a map and compass? How do I learn how to do this?
That's a great question. We have a really wonderful volunteer in our club right now who gives mini beginning lessons, like mini as in M-I-N-I, beginning lessons to newcomers at almost every single meet. If you don't have somebody that's specifically there to do it, if you ask one of the club members, they'll be happy to get you started in the right direction. At the beginning of each season, we also have training events where we very specifically have longer classes, maybe an hour-long class that teaches absolute beginners how the basics of reading a map and using their compass to be able to navigate. One great thing about Arctic Orienteering Club is almost all of our meets have 5 levels of courses at every single meet. And the beginning level of course, you do not need to use a compass at all. It will be on trails the whole way. And it's a very simple and short course. So you can start by just jumping in and you'll be learning step by step as you move your way up through the different courses.
Thanks, Jen. So Mike, let's talk about the club a little bit. Tell us, do you have a little history of the club or what kind of activities it does?
Yeah, we're a 501(c)(3). I am not a good historian on this. Jen might have a better handle on exactly when the club formed. My belief is people started orienteering in the 70s or 80s. Is that correct, Jen? And then formed a club at some point.
I'm pretty sure it was originally derived from a group called Old Folks Sports, and they were in the 80s doing snowshoeing and orienteering and some kind of off the beaten track type activities. And then eventually the Arctic Orienteering Club branched off of that. By the time I moved here in 91, it was definitely a well-established club.
Yeah, and so we have a board that meets a lot off season. There's probably about 12, 13 members on the board, and we try to plan the next year's season and what type of events. Occasionally, actually, and our season runs from usually May to September. Occasionally, we have meets in the winter, but with snow conditions being so variable lately, it's hard to plan around that. Those are kind of pop-up events. We don't have them on the schedule, but we see what conditions are look like, and we might have one or two skios during the winter. There's different types of orienteering. There's foot orienteering, where you're on your foot, that's the most common one, but there's also ski orienteering. Like I mentioned, you're on skis. There's also bike orienteering. And our meet next week is bike orienteering. We normally have meets on Wednesday nights, almost every Wednesday night during the season. And I'm trying to think a little bit more of the club history. I know at some point, Jen, when was we had a national event up here, and that was kind of a big deal in the club's history. When was that? Was that in the 90s?
I think it was around 90. It was right before I was involved in the club.
Okay. And that really kind of got some large parts of some terrain mapped for us. So our maps are specialized. They're a little bit different than normal maps. And creating and maintaining these maps are a big part of what the volunteer effort goes into of the club, of keeping everything going. So.
And those maps, let's talk about the maps. It's a great resource. Is that open for everybody or just members, or how do people access the maps?
Yeah, right now the base maps are designed to be loaded into a mapping program that allows you to draw the courses, and those aren't generally available. But if you go onto our website and dig around under there's a Meet Director tab on our website, which is oalaska.org. We have previous meets up there. So if you click on that, it'll take you to a publicly accessible folder, and you can download PDFs of previous meets. So it'll have that, all those symbols Jen was talking about with that start and all the different controls. The only difference is when you're actually out on the field, you won't see those controls. You know, they're not physically there because it's a meet from a while ago, but it is a great way to become familiar with parts of parks here in town, Far North, Bicentennial Park, and lots of other areas, lots of other parks that we have mapped. And it's the detail level on the maps is significantly different. They're usually 10,000 scale or 5,000 scale, and the contours are only 5 meters, which is pretty intricate.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
How do I just, as far as the meets go, if I want to attend, is there a pre-registration? Does it cost anything? Or do people just show up?
Yeah, that's a good question. So once this, yes, there is a pre-registration for the entire season. We have a season waiver that you have to fill out once for the season. And that you can do online. If you go to the website, there's a big button on it that says season waiver. So you fill that out. If for some reason you don't fill it out and you show up at the meet, we'll have a piece of paper, you can do it. And then for the event itself, most events you don't have to register. You just show up. Typically, you're allowed to start between 5 and 7. And they're staggered starts, kind of like some of the ski races and some of the running races, so that you're not out on the same course with the same person at the same time. Normally it's $10 for adults, and kids are free. But if it's your first time ever orienteering, that's free. We'll give you a freebie. And then if you really get into it and you do an entire season, there's a season rate you can pay that ends up being a lot cheaper than $10 a meet. So you can pay for the meet online as well if you know you're going, or you can pay in person. So.
Right. So your season one just admitted to September. We'll be airing this at right at the end of the 2022 season. I guess one question I had is I remember the infamous or famous Halloween orienteering events. I think that we don't do those anymore, or something's taking their place, or.
Well, Jen is VP of events, so I'll let her chime in on that. So
about the Halloween orienteering, it is an event that was super fun that we did for years, and we would have tons of volunteers who would go out and dress up in costumes and set up control stations around Far North Bicentennial Park or out by the Science Center at Campbell Creek. And hundreds of kids would come through in the dark on Halloween night, orienteering, getting candy, and the volunteers would have big dioramas set up for the, you know, displaying all kinds of horrors and people jumping out and scaring the kids. And it was really very exciting. We have fallen out of doing that partly because there are other events in town that have kind of taken on that role of being slightly outdoor mayhem for kids on Halloween. But we are going to try to rejuvenate it this year. I did have some volunteers who said that they are willing to try to work on it. And I think I might try to rope in one of the high school cross-country teams as well to be a part of it. So hopefully we'll be rejuvenating that. And if you want to check our website, which is oalaska.org, to keep updated with our calendar, check in on that in mid-October and see if we've got something posted there for you to participate in, because it is really fun when we've done it.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that's coming back. And we'll have the website on the Outdoor Explorer website. We'll have a link to the Orienteering Club's website on the Outdoor Explorer website. This is Paul Torek. You're listening to the Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. We're talking about orienteering today. Scott Patterson, go ahead and introduce yourself. Your resume is amazing. you've been in the Olympics twice. You've been some amazing finishes, the upper end of the elite in skiing. So talk to us where you're at and how this fits into your life.
Yeah, as you said, I've now been to two Olympics, just wrapped up Beijing this winter. And so kind of we build it back into training over the summer. We're looking at a lot of outdoor activity, whether it's roller skiing, running, things like that. And so in a general week and almost every day, I'm looking at training 4 to 5 hours a day. And a lot of that is running, a lot of that is roller skiing. And sometimes it can get a little monotonous on these dreary days in August as we're looking at recording this. It's not always the most fun to just think of going out for a long 2-hour run on standard trails. And so I've really latched on to orienteering this summer as something kind of to mix up the routine. And as Jen and Mike were talking about, kind of that intellectual component of activity that combines with just a normal training session. So here I am at work on a dreary day, 4 or 5 p.m. rolls around, and I'm trying to motivate to get out the door. And like, yeah, it's Wednesday, I need to go do orienteering. So I sign up late, usually jump on my bike over to wherever it is in town, which, I mean, often great way to get out to a new place, whether it's just Far North Bicentennial again, or places that I frequent less often, like Ruth Arcand or Russian Jack out at Kincaid. We did one earlier this year at McHugh Creek, which was a lot of fun. And then just this last weekend was the Mountain Oak starting out at Glen Alps, which I had a blast with. A little bit longer course, a little bit further between controls and higher up in the hills. And so it really, kind of that stimulation that you get with the map and compass changes things up for me. So I've had a lot of fun with it. I may be coming in as one of the fittest people doing the orienteering meets, but I get beaten back by the brush and the navigation every once in a while, and always struggling to learn a little more, do a little better.
Yeah, I was looking at the results from this last Wednesday, and here you are, you know, one of the world's best skiers, and you got third. What happened?
Yep, I spent quite a bit of time at two different controls and didn't read the map quite right and was looking for the wrong feature. So it's definitely, it's a learning experience and a challenge. And I mean, I'm really enjoying that, where it isn't just about the fitness that I know I have. It's about more than that.
Yeah, one of my new claims to fitness, I almost beat Adam Verrier, also in his prime, at an event like this, and then I got lost. And yeah, go ahead, Jen.
Thanks. I just wanted to jump in and say that I think that that's something that's really actually unique and special about Scott in terms of being an elite athlete coming in and joining into orienteering. And when, as far as I know, he did not have a lot of experience with that prior to when he started with us just a year or so ago. And many, many of the other really high level athletes who've come in and tried to jump into orienteering as adults have struggled with that navigation component. And they have run super fast in the wrong direction over and over again. And we're really impressed with how Scott has embraced the navigation component of orienteering and is managing to beat the, many, many year champion of Arctic orienteering again and again, that he's doing a fantastic job.
Yeah. Let's go to that, Scott. Maybe talk a little bit about the, like you mentioned, I got lost or whatever. I mean, I always think about orienteering of getting myself unlost, but apparently you're getting lost while orienteering or misplacing things. What advice do you have for folks coming into this?
Well, one of the things that I really find is a lot of the places I think I know the trails really well. And so I can just go hustling off into the woods, running as fast as I can, and quickly not paying attention to where you're actually going. And that's definitely one of the things I think coming in, I tell myself I need to slow down a little bit and follow a contour or take note of those light poles or boulders or things like that, instead of just racing down the trail and then realizing 5 minutes later I was actually on the wrong trail. And I'm quite bad about actually pulling out my compass when I'm not sure where I am, or I pull out the compass later than I should when I'm trying to run along a bearing or something like that. So it's something that actually using the compass can be pretty useful. And too often I find that the compass isn't really a helpful tool for me. I'm just looking at the map and blasting my way through the woods, end up in a patch of Devil's Club and fight my way through it. Who cares?
Yeah.
I think another thing, I mean, I don't know if it's been brought up before, but especially on the long courses, we definitely get into some Devil's Club, definitely get into some scratchy thorns. So it's a good idea if you're a newcomer to maybe wear long pants.
Nice. Let's talk about that a little bit, just safety and comfort. I mean, you're running through the woods, apparently by yourself. Does a club or what kind of safety precautions are taken or do you recommend for people? Jan or Mike?
I'll hop in on that one. Well, we design our, so some of the hazards are just moving rapidly through the woods. So, you know, when you first start as a beginner, you're going to be on the trail, right? But what we hope is as you get comfortable with orienteering, you move off the trail. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of it is you take the hopefully a faster route through the woods. Hopefully you're able to avoid the Devil's Club. But I know what Scott's saying. I've got Devil Club mark all at my hands today just from doing something at Kincaid the other night. So but you want to wear clothing. So one, we recommend you wear clothing that's appropriate. So often that's long pants, even if you are more of a shorts person, although there are a couple of club members that run in shorts all the time. I don't know how they do it. And you want to be comfortable moving off trail in the woods. That's where you want to be. So you want to have footwear that's appropriate. You want to manage your energy level so you don't get completely exhausted. That's where mistakes can happen. And you want to be careful mostly about the terrain. The most likely injury you face is that you might twist an ankle or, you know, sometimes there's deadfall people go over. You have to be very careful when you go over that. So it's about moving through the terrain in a safe manner. And then finally, we do ask people to carry a safety whistle. And we also, that's designed so that you start blowing that. If we're at a meet and I hear that whistle, I'm going to stop what I'm doing as a competitor and go help that person and see what's going on with them. We also print the, typically we print the cell phone number of the meet director on the map now, because that, or it's at the start somewhere. So that way, if you're having trouble or you're just running late, you can call, or we can send someone out to help you help find your way back. The other hazards are like insects and wasps, and then moose. And then finally, of course, everyone's worried about bears. We recommend bear spray for people if that's what they're comfortable with. And we kind of design our whole season around where we try to be in the deeper woods near streams that eventually become salmon streams early in the season. And then this middle part of the season in the July, August, September timeframe, we start moving into more urban maps where we're less likely to encounter bears that are on the salmon streams. And so we try to kind of stay away from them, or if we do need to, we try to, you know, maybe only have it on across it perpendicular, but don't follow a stream. So we try to have the people that set up the meets be aware of their surroundings and what time of year it is, and try to avoid hazards. So we don't want to put controls on a cliff or something like that, you know, so.
And explain what a control is.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the flag you're looking for in the woods. So when you'll see it, it has a bright white and orange, almost looks like a box kite. You might have seen these in the woods if you because we put them up every week. So I'm sure a lot of people have seen them. Those are orienteering controls. We put them out maybe a day before or earlier that day, and they stay up for the meet that night, and then they go down. And when you get there, what we used to do was mark a piece of paper with a punch on the control. And then when you come back, you have this card that has all these punches. It shows which each punch has a kind of a slightly different figure in it of holes. And that will verify that you actually went to the control. But this season, we just, thanks to the work of one of our volunteers, we introduced electronic punch. So you run around with something that looks kind of like a USB key. And when you get to the control, you dip it into the into a little hole, a little scanner that rapidly reads that, and then when you come back, we read the results off of that, and we can print out a receipt that has your splits on all your controls. And so now people, after they're done, they can compare their splits right there in real time.
And wow, cool.
See, oh wow, you know, I was fat, so I beat Ian, one of our veteran orienteers, on the first, I never beat him, but I beat him on the first leg of the first control on Wednesday night, which was amusing to me. probably not so amusing to him. But so that's been a new element this season. And, you know, if you do it for a long time, we'll sell you one of those sticks, but you can just borrow one at the meet when you first come. So.
Nice. That what's the old saying? Really, all that matters are times and prizes. So are there any prizes involved in this? What's the rewards of doing these meets?
Well, there's we have two, almost three reward systems. So we do have a season. So we have what we call traditional meets, which are the longer meets we do earlier in the season that tend to be deeper in the woods. And then we have a sprint series in the middle that we're in right now, which are the faster ones, slightly more urban terrain and shorter. And typically the reward for the season points for traditional was a Snickers bar.
Nice.
But we decided a year or two ago to hand out a nice goblet glass for the champions in each course category, for the top course categories for the men and the women. And we're going to do something similar for the sprint series this year. And then the other place we give rewards is actually to our meet directors, the people that design these courses, because it takes a lot of volunteer hours to do that. So whoever puts on a meet, they get usually it's a pint beer glass with some nice artwork on it. Jen actually designed the artwork on our last glass series. It's a really nice raven with an orienteering control with that box kite control it's flying off with. So.
Oh, fun. Nice. Great. This is Paul Tordock. You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. We're talking about orienteering with Jen Jolliffe, Mike Robinson, and Scott Patterson. We're going to take a short break and we'll come back with more discussion about orienteering and maybe some about the courses that it's that they operate here in Anchorage.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
Welcome back to Outdoor Explorer. I'm your host, Paul Tordak. We're talking about orienteering. I have with us Jen Jolliffe, Mike Robinson, and Scott Patterson. Jen, let's start with you. What about kids? Can kids do this? What are the age ranges that people can do this?
That's a great question, Paul. Orienteering is really for almost all ages. That we have some families coming out bringing their kids in their, you know, carryalls to start off with, and talking to their kids as they walk along holding hands and trying to teach them to read maps. Our simplest course is short enough that it can be walked by a family with kids that are, you know, 3, 5, 6 years old. But the efforts that we go to training kids specifically, we do have it, our courses are free for anybody who comes who's under 18. So that's an incentive right there to bring your family and have them come out orienteering. A few summers ago before COVID, I directed an orienteering camp for middle school age kids. We were kind of working with 10, 11, 12 year olds, trying to get them really honed in on their orienteering skills so that they would be independent and able to go out without their parents on some of the easier to medium level courses. And it was a really successful week-long program that brought us kind of a group of preteen kids that were all psyched about orienteering and ready to do it. And then we were a little bit cautious the next year when COVID started and didn't do a camp that summer. But we still have some of those kids coming out and being competitive. And I was laughing when Mike was talking earlier about the course this week and how he was faster than Ian Moore getting to control number one, because actually one of our junior orienteers, who's only 15, she also beat Ian to that control and was really excited that her navigational skills had boded well for her that time around.
And what's the youngest? Do you have a minimum age or is it?
There's no minimum. Yeah. There's no minimum age as long as people are with their parents. And it really is, we've left it up to parents to decide when their kids are able to orienteer independently. For myself, Ian and I have a son who, when he was 11, I think might've been the first time that he was out orienteering on one of the medium length courses on independently. And other parents have chosen different ages that they think are that's appropriate.
You know, I can't remember the time waiting for kids to come back. They've usually come back within the right time frame or give up. But I've been with kids waiting for their parents to come back.
I totally get that. And what about the other end? What are some of your older participants?
Oh, that's a great question, too. We definitely have septuagenarians coming out and orienteering. I think that we have had one or two people over 80, but there are definitely some guys in their 70s that come out pretty regularly and they do well. They often walk the course, but they can walk the course faster than a lot of people run the course for the reasons that we talked about earlier, that it doesn't matter how fast you run if you're running in the wrong direction. And these, you know, older guys have learned that they can walk more slowly, but really paying attention to their map and be more efficient in the routes that they take.
Great. So what about some of the, like, where we're, well, let's, yeah, let, what about where we talk about Kincaid? Where are some of the locations that you're operating at? Maybe you can all go through and talk about some of your favorite courses. Mike, you want to start?
Sure. Well, our you know, our traditional maps for a long time were Far North Bicentennial Park, which is of course huge, and The other ones that are traditional are like Kincaid and Russian Jack and some other areas, but I want to say about 7 or 8 years ago, probably at this point now, we got some new areas mapped. We got the Bartlett Ski Trail areas mapped. We got Earthquake Park mapped, and we got Ruth Arcan mapped all at one time. And it was fantastic to get these additional maps. And Earthquake Park's especially interesting because it has all the terrain features you want for orienteering, but on a very small scale. There are contours, I think, are 2 meters or 2.5 meters. And you can literally see the depressions and the gullies and the hills and the spurs all in a very compact, it's an orienteering playground. So it's just a really cool place to go orienteering.
Scott, Jen, what about you two? Your favorite routes, courses you like?
I think one of, like Mike was saying, I think Earthquake Park is a pretty phenomenal one just with all the micro terrain. But I also really like getting out into some of the locations that I spend a little less time. One of the first meets of this season we had down at McHugh Creek, and that was kind of an interesting one to just be running around in a different place where I didn't know the trails and didn't know the features. We also had one off Clinton Drive, kind of by the Muldoon Curve, where we did need military base passes to run that meet, but it was definitely a cool area, a little bit more out of the common beaten path. But I think also one of my favorites, we last weekend did what we call a mountain O. Mm-hmm. So that's generally a longer course, a little bit higher up in the hills. And so whereas a normal traditional course might take around an hour for me, that one was about 2.5 and went up from there. And so that started from Glen Alps, and we were up on Little O'Malley in the ball field and back by Willowa Lakes. And I really liked kind of exploring some new areas back in the mountains that some places I'd been before and some just a little bit off the trails. And you're like, okay, this is a new area, cool area, fun to check out and link up in unique ways. So I really appreciated that mountain orienteering.
Yeah, I've done, I've been up in the mountains, and the club used to do one up on a McHugh Peak. And I remember the first time I did it, it was a dense fog in the clouds, couldn't see anything. And that's a big zone up there. I mean, it's a lot of terrain. And I'm pretty sure I found the controls for sure, but I didn't really know where I was the whole time. I mean, in the sense of like being able to look around and go, oh, there's Anchorage, I just turned around the whole time. Yeah. It was a lot of fun, yeah.
Yeah, the compass helps, but every once in a while you can't even believe the compass and have to go find a known mountain or something and double check your compass reading. So the fog can make it definitely trickier.
Yeah, and they would hide, devil of the route setter was, would hide the controls in these little crevasses. So you couldn't even see them on a good day, let alone a foggy day. It was very devious, but a lot of fun. And I probably spent 3 or 4 hours up there wandering around. Then the next year they did the same thing. I'm like, oh, that's where I was. And I got to really understand the McHugh complex a lot better. Jen, well, what about
the gain can be crazy on these. I mean, Scott, what was your gain on that, on the elevation gain on that? You did the long course. I did the medium course at that Mount Noe, and I did just under 5,000 foot gain, I think. Wow. So.
Okay, I might have to double check my numbers, but I thought it was somewhere around 4,000 feet.
Oh, maybe I meant 3,800 feet then for medium. So,
And then how many miles?
For that long mountain orienteering, I ran 13.6 miles. So that's definitely on the upper end of any of the orienteering meets we do here.
Wow, yeah, half a marathon.
Yeah.
And 4,000 feet. That's impressive. And what was your time, Scott? Do you remember?
I ran it in about 2.5 hours.
Wow, that's great. That's impressive. Jen, what about you? What are some of your favorite routes or courses?
Well, I love the ones that you guys described already. And thinking about that foggy orienteering meet up on by McHugh, I totally remember that one. That map and the mountain orienteering map that Scott was referring to were both products of Ian Moore, kind of different generations of his parks map that he's been working on for decades. And it's wonderful that in the last couple of years, he's been able to make a bunch of maps that haven't been as thoroughly field checked, as Mike was saying, as some of our maps, but have allowed us to do fewer meets in cooler, new, different places. So more different places, including all those. And also talking about running in the mountains in the fog, can I segue to a novel that I've
Yeah. Jen's written a novel. So talk to us about your novel.
Thank you. So I, in an effort again to kind of spread the idea of navigation to both the younger set and the older set, and how important it is as a part of all of our lives, I wrote a novel trying to work on my artistic background and incorporate it with my orienteering background. The novel is based on a kid who's growing up in a land of ridgetop communities that are surrounded by very dense fog and intricate topography. And the only way that they can travel between their communities is if they are exceptionally good map readers. And it is the mentor story of this kid learning how to be an excellent navigator and the interactions he has both with his mentor and with all of the evil topography and other things that he finds under the fog. It's called Fog Runner, and you can access a link to a sample of it on my website, which will be in the show notes too.
Yep. Well, Fog Runner, that sounds good. And now you got me curious, what evil things? They're like trolls and dragons? Like what are we talking here?
So the people are actual people, and all the physics in this book is true to real world physics. The only strange thing is that there is this very dense fog between these communities, and the people are carrying pack trains of animals between the communities that that have to be guided by specialized navigators who are called fog runners, and this protagonist wants to become one of these famous fog runners who are the only people who can independently run quickly between villages, which are miles and miles apart through slot canyons and floating bogs and braided rivers and all kinds of things that if you can't read a map, you don't know that they're coming because of this dense fog. You can't actually see between the communities.
Oh, fine. And apparently they didn't have GPS either.
No, they didn't.
It was a great book. I enjoyed reading it. It kind of has a sci-fi vibe to it. I mean, you're putting it kind of in the fantasy. It's kind of almost like, I don't know if it's post technology world, or it's like there's some technology, but it's not the same level of technology in our world. And so I don't know if it's because it's an alternate world completely, or if it's our world in the future, and some reason there's fog in these valleys. I'm not sure yet. I'm hoping she writes another one so I can find out. So.
It's definitely a different world than our world. There's more analog technology than electronic technology. It's a different kind of place.
Yeah, for those who remember, though, in 9/11, they shut down the GPS satellites, and all of a sudden, like, we're all lost, right? Or nothing works. And so that's all it would take. And we would need our compass, our map and compass again. This is Outdoor Explorer. You're listening to a show. We're talking about orienteering. I have Jen Jolliffe, Mike Robinson, and Scott Patterson with me. Let's talk about the training course, Mike, a little bit. My understanding is a course that one can go out and practice on.
That's a great question. And I should have mentioned when I talked about finding previous maps that you can run. We have a permanent course set up. For a long time, we had one, and people might remember this if they're familiar with it, out of kind of in the Campbell Tract area near the Science Center. And we had a scout approach us who's working on his Eagle badge. And he had actually, one of our youth training a few years ago, we had an orienteering camporee. The whole camporee was there at Camp Gorsuch, but they came over in buses and would be on one of our really good places map near Mira Middle Lake School. And came over and we did like a day long orienteering, activities and training exercises for him. So one of the scouts out of this for his Eagle Project wanted to help the club, and he worked with some of the club volunteers, and they decided on a permanent course, but they decided instead of trying to fix the permanent course at Campbell track area, which is kind of in disrepair, they selected Ruth Arcand. So we have this great course out there now. There's signposts there with the controls are there permanently. You can go to the website and download the maps off the club website. Also, they have a QR code on all of them. So if you just show up there and you see them and Ruth Arcand with your phone, just take a picture of that QR code and it'll pull up a PDF of the map. And you can actually just do the course. There's three courses of different lengths there. And that got installed at the last summer and was available last summer. So
great.
And it's a great resource to get out. If you have never been to a meet and you want to try it out without the hassle of going to a meet, you can go there. If you have a group or, you know, you want to bring a group of kids, you want a group, bunch of people, it's just a great way to get out and do it on your own.
So that's a training course with the Arctic Orienteering Club that is really responsible for all this that we're talking about here in the Anchorage area. I just occurred to me, are there clubs like in Fairbanks or down on the Kenai?
They're not. There are sometimes interest in this, and we've had people out in the Mat-Su Valley. We do have a map out in Crevasse Moraine Trails out there, and there's some other areas that are could be interesting places to map. We also have a map at Settlers Bay Coastal Park, which is a small park right next to the golf course out there. And we just got that mapped 3 years ago, and I'm actually running a meet there next Saturday on the 3rd. So, I've thought about, are there other groups interested? And we did change our bylaws a few years ago, so we can have chapters. So if there's a group of people that wants to start a club, instead of having to start a club from scratch and being their own nonprofit and everything, we have the ability to open up chapters now if there's a group of interested people. So one of the things we've found is for the Anchorage area, people, it's much easier to, it's sometimes it's hard to get people motivated for the drive. And so if there was a group down on the Kenai, you know, myself personally, I'd be willing to drive down the Kenai on the weekends, but how many people in Anchorage are. So if we had a group of people down on the Kenai that were interested in orienteering, it would be in our interest, you know, great. Let's help you as a group.
Yeah.
We'll loan you equipment. We'll loan you skills and we'll get going, and we'll help you try to get off the ground. And that'll give us more meets. We can go in a terrain, more interesting terrain we haven't seen before for orienteering. So
it sounds like if there's a listeners out there from the Valley or the Kenai or Fairbanks or anywhere in the state, and they're interested, get a hold of Mike.
Yeah, definitely.
He'll set you up. Mike, you mentioned earlier about some technology, some uploading map. You're talking about maps and course upload. Is that something that you want to talk about a little bit more?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. I mentioned, I think before with this electronic punch, we can see the splits on a piece of paper right there. But if we also have the ability for many of the meets when you go home, maybe that next day, the course maps will be posted online. And we use a software called Route Gadget. And what that allows you to do is go and your results from the electronic punch we uploaded there, you select yourself, and then you can either upload your GPS if you happen to be running a GPS tracker on your watch, or you can hand draw your route, and you can, it's available then, and then you can compare, the people that bother to go there and draw their routes. We can then compare what route did you take between control 2 and control 3, and how long did it take you? And you can even, the little running dots of different colors that show the different competitors, so you can actually see them in real time as if they ran the race at the same time against each other.
So
you can go there now if you want to see previous races. They're all up there. It's a button called Route Gadget on the front page, a little bit lower on the page, and you can go look at other races people ran before. So
before you know it, they'll, everybody will have a little head cam and it'll just become virtual orienteering.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
This is outdoor sport. Oh, go ahead, Jen.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add, because Mike mentioned people having GPS tracks, and earlier I was saying this is not geocaching, you can't just follow a route. When we have orienteers going out with their GPS watches, they are not using the watch for their navigation. Okay. They are simply logging a track and then loading it later. So although there's nobody out there making sure that they're not cheating, it would be pretty invalid.
It'd be hard. It would take longer to cheat, I think.
And it would, yeah.
The map's not geo-referenced in a way that they could see their coordinates. So,
yeah, a good orienteer can follow a map faster than a GPS.
And with the crazy thing about it is I run the GPS track and sometimes I draw the route I think I ran. And then I upload the GPS track and I go, oh, that wasn't where I was.
It's a really good learning tool to be able to draw your map on your course. To be able to draw your route onto your map after you've run it, just to see if you can remember where you actually went, because of course it's where you intend to go, and then there's where you actually end up, and then there's what you remember about where you actually went, and all of these are different things, and it's good learning tool to review in your head. And in fact, Ian Moore, that we've referred to a few times, who's one of our best orienteers, he occasionally goes out after a meet a few days later and he'll go without his map and try to rerun the course when there are no control markers out there and no map, just to see if he can remember the exact course. And amazingly, I've seen him do it. He can.
That's amazing. Right.
It's also a pretty interesting tool if you, as a relatively newcomer, to kind of go back afterwards and look at, like Jen was saying, where Ian is so good at it, and I go upload my GPS and I run to the control and then run three circles around the control and don't actually find it, while I watch the little dot of Ian go straight to the control and then leave me in the dust. So it's an interesting tool if you are data oriented and like that learning path. It's a good way to come back and try and get better for the next time.
So it's like a lot of these benefits, you know, and Scott maybe will talk to this, but there's benefits of orienteering. It's not just physical, but it sounds like it's mental also.
Yeah. I mean, I work as an engineer and definitely a bit data oriented. So coming back and looking at that is definitely some mental challenge, and trying to learn how to do it better is a big component. And I think part of the fun for me definitely keeps me coming back.
Yeah. What are some of the other benefits of orienteering? Just let anybody answer that.
Well, I would chime in that we have a lot of people that don't run the course. You know, they get out in the world. I mean, it's great to be competitive and run, but a lot of people are out there to walk, and they meet friends and they bring their families. And I always say the running's optional, but the thinking isn't. So either way, they have to, whichever map they're engaged with, they have to, you have to kind of think about what you're doing. And eventually I think people have made some good friendships through the Orienteering Club. It can be a bit of a geeky group at first when you show up at a meet. They're all looking at their maps and discussing kind of esoteric terms and maybe dressed, wearing weird clothing they like to run in. But if you kind of strike up a conversation with them and I've made some friendships through the club over the years. So they're a friendly group, but they're just engaged in kind of a geeky activity. So the first time you see it, you're like, what are they doing? So. Yeah.
Scott, let's go back to you to sort of wrap things up a little bit. What's your latest with your skiing career? Where are you headed, and maybe a little bit of how orienteering fits into it?
Yeah, what else am I doing than orienteering, basically?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I competed in the Olympics this winter, and I am still competing. I'm on the U.S. national team. I also train and race with APU Nordic Ski Center based out of Anchorage, so spend most of my summers here. But come November, we kind of leave for most of the season. I'll be heading off to Northern Finland to start the season. And race World Cups, World Cup cross-country ski races almost every weekend from Thanksgiving weekend all the way through April. And this year we have World Championships in Slovenia. So that's kind of one of my big focuses. So where that fits into summer and orienteering is that we're training all the time. It's cross-country skiing is definitely one of those endurance sports where it's about putting in the hours. And I think a big component of putting in the hours for me is making sure those hours are fun and that I'm enjoying them. It's not just about going out and slogging the pounding pavement for 4 hours a day or something. So orienteering is, I don't think it's always the thing that's maybe optimal on my training plan that I work with my coaches to develop, but it's something that I have fun doing and it makes the hours go by. And if I'm happier, I'm training faster, I'm skiing faster. And so it's really bringing together both outdoor activities and building fitness with really just enjoying the time outdoors. And I think orienteering is a great avenue for that. And I mean, I'm trying to bring my friends in and get more people out there. So I think I can't speak highly enough of it.
That's a great plug for the sport. And do your coaches go, now don't injure yourself? Is that in the back of your head as you're running through, or do the competitive juices take over and away you go?
The competitive juices for sure take over some, but I'm always pretty cautious about injuries. And I mean, I think orienteering, there's a lot of good safety measures out there. I spend a lot of time out there running off trails in the area around town or in the mountains, so it doesn't feel that risky. Going to do Mount Marathon or something feels more so, but I think my coaches are pretty supportive. Just this last week, Wednesday, when we were out at Kincaid, while I was competing, one of our APU coaches brought the whole kind of middle school age kids out to the orienteering meet and had them all running around through the woods. So they're supportive as well. It's a cool activity for any age group.
That's great. Any last thoughts, Jen or Mike?
It's hard to beat what Scott just said. I think that he really summed things up well with it being a sport for all ages, that it's exercising your mind as well as your body, and that it's really just a whole lot of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Mike, any thoughts?
Come out and give it a shot and tell people it's your first time and people will come out and help you get started. And it's free the first time too. So
great. Well, thank you all for being on the show. This is Paul Torlap, your host. We've been talking about orienteering with Jen Jolliffe and Mike Robinson with the Arctic Orienteering Club, and Scott Patterson, Olympic skier and world-class athlete. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thanks for listening. And to my guests, Jen Jolliffe, Mike Robinson, and Scott Patterson. And a special thanks to our producer, Eric Bort. This is your host, Paul Torlock, and from all the hosts at Outdoor Explorer, thanks for listening. Read your map, and we'll see you outdoors.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and in your favorite podcast app. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.